around it, he will.
It's the Skinny on Sports Podcast with Aaron Cowan.
I throw balls far. You want good words? Data language.
Talk real sports with a real man.
Come after me! I'm a man! I'm 40!
And now, here's the be-all, end-all, know-it-all of high school, college, and pro sports. Aaron Skinny Cowan with the Skinny on Sports.
We're talking about practice, man. I'm the MVP!
Good morning, Jared.
How are you?
Man, you had a heck of a week.
That weekend flew by. Yeah, we had a lot going on.
Tell us about it.
It was fantastic. I mean, came up short, but it was fantastic. I mean, it's already hitting me, Aaron.
I just
wanted it so bad for those girls.
I was sitting there imagining as I was watching the game changer, and I see, oh my gosh, it's in the fifth inning, and the score is tied 9-9. I was trying to imagine being there just to watch you. And you know, and watch after as you get, because you know you guys got out of the top of the fifth, still tied at 9, so you're up there swinging with a chance to win.
Right.
Unfortunately, it doesn't happen. Then they get 2 in the bottom of, or the top of the sixth, and then it ends up 11-9. But man, what an awesome run by the Canute
AUs. Yeah. They to recap, I mean, they got to that Final Four championship series. That was, you know, what we talked about Friday. I kind of had an inkling that was a real good possibility after seeing some of the other results and watching some other teams. Just a matchup, X's and O's situation. I think we got a shot, and they did. They took care of business. Going back to Saturday, they played a 1 o'clock game and then had to sit for a couple hours and then come back and play like a 4:30 game against a team we're very familiar with in Cheyenne. They got down 9-4 in that one, and then their bats came alive and had a great way to end the game because Cheyenne was the home team. And I mean, it's hard to turn double plays in Nate U, and we did that to end the game. Kudos to Cheyenne for a great season, by the way. They had a fantastic season. And then got to the Sunday matchup. Shout out to Arnett.
Yeah, got them. I saw that Arnett was in the semi.
Yeah, got them in the semi, and actually ran into one of our listeners who's texted us quite a bit from Arnett, and have some ties with him back my days up at Northwestern, and got to talk to him a little bit. He was actually one of the coaches. And girls, I mean, their bats were coming alive at the right time, and it was kind of the mumblings with all the parents and coaches. I think we are peaking at the right time, which is what you want. I mean, every girl up and down the lineup putting the ball in play, and that's all we ask for, but they're putting the ball in play hard, you know, hitting it in front, hitting it hard, and they're making the defense work. And that continued against Arnett, and then got this Stigler team, and we mentioned Stigler. They seem to always be there at all levels. They got a great program over there, and this was no exception. These girls watching Stigler play in that first thing, they were the game before us, and they can catch it, they can throw it with some velocity behind it, and they could hit. And I thought, well, we got our work cut out for us. So we come out, we get not 3 up, 3 down, but we get out, and they were the visiting team, and we held them scoreless top of the first. We come out, we produce 3 runs, and like, that's a heck of a start. They come back and eke away at it and go up 9-3, and then we come up and we get a 6 spot, and that was tough to do against that team, but we get 6 runs on them. Those who don't know, you get 6 runs, they stop the inning, and we switch sides because it could be a marathon. So we tied it up 9-9, hold them to 3 outs again with no runs, going into the bottom of the fifth with a chance to win. And they couldn't do it. I mean, we got a runner on, but that's how good Stigler is. They knew, get the lead runner, so we would ground out on the left side, and they make that throw over to second. And then they were able to produce a couple of runs, and we just ran out of gas, basically. But what a run, and what a heck of a season for those girls. And it's emotional when you win it for those girls, you know. I'm sorry. I'm trying to.
You're doing better than I thought you would.
There were a lot of tears yesterday, but at the end of the day, we were very happy with a very successful season. The goal last fall with this group, this is what we want. We want to be in this game, and they were, and they proved they're one of the best in the state, and I'm very proud of them.
Yeah, that's, you know, you get that close, and it was weird watching it because you'd see the ball hit, but then it'd be an out, and it was always on both sides there. Mm-hmm. Like in the fifth inning, it seemed like getting the lead runner, and then finally they got one past second there in the last inning, and were able to put two on the board. So it was you guys. Arnett was in the semifinal round, the final four.
Yep.
Cheyenne was just outside of that.
Yeah, they fell in their, if necessary, game, if you will, to Tallahena on Saturday night. It was, I think, they got it close, and they just ran out of gas, I think, as well. Talking to some Cheyenne fans, they kind of said that game that, because they were up on us 9-4, and we came back, and then they had a chance to win it there in the bottom of the fifth, and we, like I said, it was a heck of a play by our second baseman, Rogan Patterson. She caught a line drive. Girl got too far off first base. She tried to run her down to make the tag, then decided, I can't. She just flicked it just in time, and it was bang, bang. And, man, our crowd, I can't say enough about the parents, grandparents, family, the support system for those girls, because they work very hard. And the traveled all the way to Stroud, and every game was full of fans rooting those girls on. And that place was packed. Everybody had fans there.
Right.
Didn't matter. You know, I mentioned Arnett. You know, they're longer drive than us, and they had a good following. Cheyenne had a great following. The place was packed from day one. So it's, can't say enough about the support for all those girls. It's awesome. It's awesome to see.
That was the 8U. 10U, I never really found scores. I know Elk City was in that final four.
They came back and won four
games on, or three games on Friday. On Saturday to get there, but they I know they didn't win. If somebody knows who did, that'd be nice. 225-9698 is the text line. And then 12U down in Ada, just kind of listening yesterday as the Arapaho baseball 10U baseball team is in the same tournament we were. I think they won 12U, back-to-back state titles for Arapaho.
Okay,
just kind of following along. I feel like that's what happened. It just kind of, hey, what's our score? You know, listen to the guys talk, Jared and some of the others that were over there. I think they won, but their scores stop on Friday here on the
Kids.
Yeah, it stops there on Friday. I know they Canute beat Arapaho 2-1 on Friday.
Well, then Arapaho came back and got
them. Came back through. And so I'm led to believe that they were the 12U state champs. Like I said, I'm pretty sure that's back-to-back for those ladies over there at Arapaho Butler. So just, you know, an awesome week. We talked about it all last week. Not only getting them there, you know, what are we, 23 teams in the three age divisions from Weatherford West out here in West Oklahoma.
Yeah.
And to have not only that many make it, but then a bunch in the running. Yeah, there you go. Arapaho beat Pahrump 6-1. That's what I wasn't 100% sure of the score, but I was pretty positive that Arapaho did win the state tournament, and sure enough, they did. So congratulations to those ladies over there. So a runner-up, a state title, and, you know, like I said, Elk City was in the final four of 10U, or right, I guess maybe playing Saturday. Maybe that wasn't quite the final four. Anyhow, I know that they won three after losing to Hobart.
10U. I got the 10U here. Elk City lost to Fletcher 4-0 in the semifinals. Cordell beat Hobart. So it was Elk, and Hobart all in the semifinals of 10U. And then there's Fletcher. So it was Cordell and Fletcher for the championship. Fletcher won 9-4.
There you go.
And I remember that Fletcher team from last year in 8U. They had some hitters. And I was a little relieved I saw they moved up to 10U. Because they're the ones who knocked us out last year.
Right.
But, so, hey, that's good representation right there in the final four.
Absolutely.
Of 10U. You had three out of four.
Yeah, I should have known Hobart was there because Hobart was the one that beat Elk City.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
So Elk City came through the back door, basically.
So just what a great weekend. Congratulations to all the kids, not only to make it, like I said, but then to get there and do some damage and be in the running. For state titles, you guys runner-up, and Arapaho, the 12U girls, are the state champions. So it's cool. Now it's summertime.
Yeah.
Do all the swimming you want, girls. There's no restrictions.
Yes. There was at the hotel. We were like, no. Wait. And then we put time limits. Okay, you got 1 hour. Go. And they made that worth
and not
it.
Not a second more.
And then one night we swam, and then we bought them a bunch of pizza, and the hotel let us use their conference room to eat it in, and it turned into this. It wasn't plain like to say, hey, go get board games and cards. We'll all hang out, eat pizza. Brought in some music, and it turned into this mini pep rally that the girls started. They were doing chants and playing, and I thought that was really cool. A little fun, little team bonding experience.
That's
there.
Cool.
But it was a lot of fun. This is so cool because, I mean, you mentioned all these teams and all those. I mean, the future is bright out here in Western Oklahoma with athletics. We've said that up and down. I mean, all sports. We see it. This is another proof that it is. You know what I mean?
No doubt.
It's more proof that all over we're going to see. So, you know, get out there and watch these games, you know. Whether it be high school, slow pitch, fast pitch, whatever. You know, it's going to be good competition and a lot of fun. So I encourage everyone, because you're probably watching future state champs. And who knows after that?
Yeah, there you go. We lost 4-0 to Fletcher in the semifinals. Yeah, there's no doubt about that. And you'll have a chance with some baseball coming up the week of July the 4th.
That's right.
I think a lot of those regionals were, I know ours was, put out there yesterday. Like where you're going, who you're playing, and all that kind of thing.
Well, can you tell us where?
Yes. We'll, Sayre, that 10U team will be in Weatherford.
Well, not bad.
No, not bad at all. We'll be at Weatherford. I'm going to need your help on a little intel, Jared.
Oh, okay.
I'm going to need you to figure out about the 10U Clinton Maroon. So that'll be the first opponent.
I will try.
For the
I don't know.
I asked Maggot yesterday, Nathan last night. And he said they're solid.
Well, he would know.
Because I was wondering if his kid was 10 or 12U, but he's 12U.
Okay.
So, anyhow.
Yeah, so you got a bracket and everything.
Yeah,
so
we do.
You know who. So that's, okay.
On Wednesday. It starts Wednesday, which is what, the 6th? July 6th? It's a week from Wednesday. Woodward and Merritt. The Drillers will play, which the Merritt Drillers were second to us in the end of season tournament. Winner of that will play Weatherford Bulldogs, which I'm pretty sure is coached by Zach Saunders, the SWASU coach.
Yeah.
Then you've got Sayre.
Oh, I got a buddy who has a kid on that team. Yeah.
You got Sayre and Clinton. And then you've got Arapahoe, which we saw yesterday. Shockingly enough, or not shocking to anybody, Jared Cudd's kid can throw it. And he can also hit.
I'm sure.
He can play, believe it or not.
Yeah.
But they play Visay. So there's a 17 regional. And
I'm looking at it now kind of sideways.
It's sideways. It's hard to get it seen there. But if you win two, if you can win the first two games, you're going to the state tournament. Or the first three, I'm sorry. You know, get to that Thursday, 8 o'clock. You're in the finals no matter what, which means you're in the state tournament no matter what. Would happen on Saturday, which of course, once again, Saturday will be me checking my phone or sending you text messages, one of the two, throughout the day from our golf tournament. But that's what it is. So yeah, congrats. We got a text again. We've talked about the Canute 8U as the runner ups.
Oh yeah,
Elk City Cordell Hobart in the final four of the 10U. Cordell being the runner up, and then also. The Arapahoe Lady Indians as the 12U state champs. All right, Stanley Cup Finals last night.
And shout out to Arnett.
And Arnett as well. Yeah. Arnett, Cheyenne. I mean, we went through it last week, how many good teams there were, and sure enough, they all proved how good they were throughout the week. So the Avalanche, the Colorado Avalanche, which we both thought was the best team. And I think, you know, at the end of the day, when you look back on this finals, I think you're going to appreciate Colorado maybe more down the line than we do right now because of who they beat and how good a team it was always going to take to stop the roll that the Tampa Bay Lightning have been on over the past three seasons. Back-to-back cup champs. It was going to take a great team to knock them out, and it turns out the Avalanche were that this year. As Colorado wins that game 2-1, they tie the Penguins from like 2015 – with 9 come-from-behind wins throughout a playoff run, which is the most ever, tied with the Penguins. Just Colorado was the best team all year long, and the thought was always, okay, who can beat them? And the defending champs, the two-time defending champs, gave them the best shot they could give them, but it still wasn't good enough to knock off the Avalanche.
I was on the road for most of that game. I got home in time for the entirety of the third period and seen what the score was. So I knew it was going to be frantic there in that third period for Tampa Bay. So kudos, you know, in Tampa Bay. So kudos to Colorado for holding off that valiant effort from Tampa Bay, you know, pulling the goalie when they did a little earlier than I thought they would, and just throwing barrage of offense at them. And Colorado held on to do it. It's a heck of a run. I mean, they were the favorites going in. I think that was unquestionable because that was the question everyone was saying. Who's going to take down Colorado? Who's going to challenge them? And it was the defending champs. I mean, we knew that they would be the ones that would have to defend their title and challenge them. And I was, man, anyone else secretly hoping for a game seven? I know.
Oh,
we
100%.
Were. Yeah. I mean, we were rooting for Tampa Bay just for that fact. Just for a game seven, because we don't have any allegiance to either team. Now my brother-in-law does. He made a Stanley Cup at home up in Fort Collins, so he was hoisting that thing up. But fun series. Kind of glad it wasn't a blowout as far as like a sweep or a 4-1. So, but I'll see if Colorado can keep this going. You know, that's all. You know, Tampa Bay, they've kind of set that bar on how to keep it going. Even if they're not winning the Stanley Cup, they're still contenders. They have been for quite a while. So this year included, and obviously the last couple seasons before. So let's see if Colorado can carry that mantle now.
Yeah, that's it almost felt like a first of a couple of series between these two teams. Colorado youth, you know, the grizzled veterans of Tampa, sprinkled in with some new guys. You know, they're kind of a mixture. But it wouldn't surprise anybody, I don't think, if you don't see this be, you know, a series of Stanley Cup finals between these two teams, just because of the way that they play. And it's a fun brand. You almost hope it does, because maybe that can kind of start seeping into the consciousness of the country and really kind of get hockey more front of mind.
Other than just
the playoffs, or even, you know, going up against the NBA finals, you know, there's a spot there for hockey to be able to take advantage of some of the stuff that's turning people off from the NBA, and a lot of that has nothing to do with the play on the court. It's all that off the court stuff that we've talked about since COVID, basically, when it all kind of started. So that could be a way, especially if you can get a rivalry going that captures the imagination of the country in a way that that hockey hasn't in quite some time. So they did dent the Stanley Cup on the ice.
Okay.
That's got to be the quickest ever, right? I mean, listen, there's all kinds of stories about the cup and getting dented or broken. The stories are legendary.
Yeah.
But as far as taking the least amount, I mean, the thing weighs 35 pounds. Just to start out with,
and right? It's a heavy. Yeah.
It's heavy, but you know, like these guys are saying, it doesn't weigh anything when you get to lift it out there on the ice because of, you know, how much adrenaline is flowing. But I'm gonna go ahead and say that's the quickest in history that the cup has been damaged, not even getting off the ice. Now here's the question: if you guys weren't with us earlier, the tradition is now that the Avalanche have won the cup, each player on the team and throughout the organization, they will get a day to spend with the Stanley Cup. It's theirs for a day. And there's guys that go along with it, like it's bodyguards and all kinds of stuff. But they, you know, they don't really jump in and stop anything.
I'm sorry, I just saw the video of the guy falling
down. Oh, falling down, yeah. they don't really jump in and stop anything. But I think there probably is a line you can't cross with the cup, but it's way out there. So
right.
If you had a day with the Stanley Cup, what would you do?
Well, my first question is it dishwasher safe?
I'm going to go ahead and say they may not let you throw it in the dishwasher, but I don't know that.
You know, a bunch of stuff has been put in that cup, right?
Oh, yeah.
Had to
have
been.
So yes.
That'd probably be part of my – it would for one day, though. You'd have to think about that. It's not like you could take it on a long trip to the beach or something.
No.
You only have a day.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it'd be, man, it'd have to be like somewhere really, really nice to go eat. And I'd walk into, let's say, like a Morton Steakhouse or something, and with my wife, and go, a table for three, please, and have that cup, and I'd set it right there and just treat it like I'm on a date with it or something. You only have a day, right? Maybe just make a full day of it. Take it to a baseball game and have it set next to you. Buy it a ticket. Just treat it like it's an actual being.
Yeah, that's I was thinking about like yesterday. Should we have got it its own chair to set there at the games and watch?
Right.
But you have to make sure and protect it in case a foul ball comes toward
yeah,
it.
Yeah, there's your dents.
You got to be able to stop the foul balls from hitting the cup.
Anything specific you would do with it?
I mean, I feel like you'd have to take it out to, like, for me, probably strap it into the golf cart and go play 18 holes with it or something.
There you go.
Have it read my putts. Come out and what do you think this one does?
Set it on the green while you putt.
Hey, Stanley, what do you think this one does? Maybe not set it on the green because it's so heavy, but just out on the fringe.
Yeah.
You got this one going right, Stanley?
I definitely hire a photographer. If you follow me everywhere, we're taking pictures.
Oh,
you're
going
to document my day.
Yeah, because I'm terrible at that. If it comes down to me taking pictures, we're not going to have any of it.
I don't do that either. Yeah,
I'm not very good at it. But no. That would be – and honestly, of all the things, of all the stories, can you imagine if the Stanley Cup could talk?
Oh, man.
And tell you. Like, I would want to – okay, so what did the great one do with the cup?
You know, it has its own – I was just – when I was looking at this, it has its own official Twitter handle.
Does it really?
Yeah, yeah.
I'm going to have to start following that.
Yeah.
Here you go. Fill it with popcorn and watch the Mighty Ducks movies.
Hey, there you go. That's a good one. That's a good one. Or go rent out a whole theater. Yeah, that's a great idea.
I mean, wouldn't you feel like you'd spare no expense for the day with the cup? I mean, you'd obviously drink a beer out of it. That's just child's play.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think that's happened a lot.
Well, yeah.
Wasn't there a famous Sports Center commercial where somebody's eating cereal out of
it? Yes.
Yeah, so there's a lot of that going on. That's where I was thinking, man, could I get it to a beach, put a little giant margarita in it, sit on the beach with it.
Yeah, maybe they could fly it in for you. Like you would be there, and then they could fly it to you.
There you go.
When you don't have to travel with it. You're already
there.
You
plan it out and go, okay, I'm going to be on this beach
on
this day. Have that cup there with me.
Yes.
Yeah. Because it has like a handler.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah.
And the next best thing to the cup talking, since it can't, would be that guy telling stories. Or that group of guys telling stories, or gals, about what all the cup has been through. That needs to be a 30 for 30.
That's
Look at
a,
there. I
yeah.
just came up with the idea. Give us a 30 for 30 on the stories.
Stanley Cup Twitter about its ding. It just said another beauty mark.
Yeah.
Good stuff.
Your name on that ring around it.
That's cool.
It is very, very cool. College World Series is over as Ole Miss takes down Oklahoma in two games of the three-game championship series. Ole Miss won 10-3 on Saturday and then a 4-2 win yesterday to close out the Oklahoma Sooners. Man, what a fine line, because you see in both games, you know, Bennett came out a little bit on edge, got behind 4-0, then really settled in through the middle innings, which gave Oklahoma a chance to get back in it. I think it was, the sixth inning, maybe bottom of the sixth on Saturday night when the bases loaded, nobody out, a run already in, but Oklahoma was only able to scratch one more across to be down 4-2, and then the back-to-back-to-back home runs happened in the eighth, and all of a sudden the Sooners were out of it. And then yesterday, Cade Horton was awesome throughout. 7 1/3, gave up 4 hits, 1 earned run while he was out there. He ended up getting tagged with 2 earned runs total because he was responsible for the runner on first when Trevin Michael came in. But 13 Ks, 0 walks. But it's a fine line. We talk about it a bunch when we're at the Big House and how fast those games seem to go in the state basketball tournament, where, you know, a minute or two of bad play and you're wrecked and you never can get all the way back. It's kind of what happened to Oklahoma, and kind of the way they had been throughout this entire run, able to put crooked numbers up and then just kind of hold on. Instead, it was Ole Miss that put up three early, had the big inning in the eighth, and then yesterday in the bottom of the eighth, putting up three to blow past and win against OU.
Yeah, I mean, it was a great run by OU. We mentioned great runs. There's another one right there. That's baseball. Sometimes that happens. I mean, that game one, once I was able to turn it on, it was in the pool with my phone. But watching that, it just, you know, OU had their opportunities, bases loaded in what inning? Was it seventh?
Sixth or seventh,
and they just couldn't produce when they got into the Ole Miss bullpen. I thought this is what they wanted. They wanted to get Ole Miss into the bullpen and then take advantage of this stuff, and they couldn't quite do it. Made it, 4-2? Am I right?
Yeah, 4-2.
4-2, and then the onslaught happened late in the game. And yesterday, more opportunities. I know there was the controversy. Only saw highlights of the game itself. But, I mean, it is what it is. And, congrats to Ole Miss. The thing that kept staying with me, and I mentioned this on Friday, was that they were at one time a top-ranked team in this country. So we knew going in, to me anyways, that this is not just like a team that was bad in the middle of the season and barely made the cut. They were at one time a good team, and they've proven to be the best team after this weekend.
Yeah, what's crazy about it is just how close were they to being the last team out or the first team out and not the last team in? Because the committee, once they announced the pairings or the seedings, in the discussion they talked about how Ole Miss was the last team in the tournament. So how close of an edge was that?
I wonder how
to
much,
being on the other side of the bubble.
Was it like a room, 12 angry men, where they yell at each other? Yeah. No, they should not. They should be in. No, I don't think so. I'd like to know that, what happened there.
And as you're discussing that in that room with the committee members, I don't think it's probably furthest thing away from your mind of, man, if we don't put them in, we're going to have a different national champion.
Oh, yeah.
Because that's, I mean, they're essentially,
they're not thinking that.
They're essentially a committee decision away from never having a chance to do it. But kudos to them.
Do you think it ever crosses their mind that if we don't put them in, that guy's out of a job?
Well, that would have been the same. That would have been the case.
You know what I mean?
I don't think it does.
I don't think it does.
No. I do think, though, as you compare resumes, I also do think that you may look back and go, now, wait a minute. This team really is good. They really were number one.
Yeah.
But how do you square that with going 7-14 in the SEC and losing in the first round of the conference tournament?
That kind of sums up, I think, what the SEC is. It's that there's a lot of parity in that league.
And I'll tell you what else there is. There's a lot of passion for it.
Uh-huh.
And everybody knows about the SEC in football, and rightfully so. Well, Alabama in football, and every now and then another SEC team. But go back and look at what they've done in baseball.
Yep.
They've been every bit of, if not more, dominant in baseball than they have on the football field. And something that I think that OU fans got a taste of this weekend and better get ready for, that is the fan support for those teams. You know, there's no doubt that this was a shocking run by the Sooners. Nobody, even when the regional assignments came out, I don't think there was a whole bunch of OU fans rushing to StubHub to try to find tickets to Omaha.
Or get plane tickets or
and all that kind of,
hotels and stuff. I'm sure a long time ago I think we can schedule our vacation on that weekend.
And then, you see the results of that. I'm not telling you that a bunch of Ole Miss fans did, but they got there. I mean, that place was rowdy. And that's what you're going to have to get prepared for.
Yep.
Once that move is made to the SEC, that's going to be a weekly thing wherever you're going or even at your own spot.
Oh, yeah, they'll travel.
They'll be traveling, too, and especially something new.
Exactly. They want, hey, I've never been to Norman. Let's go.
Yeah, never been to Austin, never been to Norman.
It's going to be like that, obviously, in football.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's a new breed. It's a new animal.
All right, you mentioned the interference call at first. By the letter of the law, I think they called it right. But this brings up the opportunity to change the rule to make sure that, because here's the truth. Ole Miss was rewarded because of a terrible throw.
True.
A terrible throw.
Yeah.
And by, you know, 3 inches of a guy being where he was. I mean, you know, Spikerman, you know, you see sometimes guys really start deviating their path down to first. Mm-hmm. He really didn't. He bunted it, and he took off, and he ran. And he took a half a step inside of where he started. You know, and it looked like, unfortunately, if it had been, I think he beats it anyway. Like, you know, it's going to be bang, bang right there mm-hmm. as his foot is hitting the base and the guy's glove all at the same time, kind of. But as far as the rule that is in place, I think they made the right call. But something needs to be done to looking at that rule, because it felt like, you know, either side, whoever it would have happened to, the offense made a great play, the defense didn't. Yet the defense is still rewarded with an out when they shouldn't have been.
Right. It is, now help me here, because again, I was driving.
Yeah, I was too. I saw the replay.
No, I was actually, the game was still going or over when our game was just over too. Did they review it? Is this reviewable?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And they did review it.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Or they got together, because, you know, the highlight I saw, he's standing on second base, let's go, and then all of a sudden something happens. I'm sure they did. Because, mm-hmm. like I said, we were driving. We had just left to come to the baseball game here. I would assume that, yeah, it was reviewed. That's
okay.
It got there. The play is stopped. And then all of a sudden it's like, hey, wait a minute. You need to look at that. And then a run gets taken off the board. And you know, and all the rest of it happens.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's one of those that's going to be rehashed and hashed and all day today, at least in this state. But at the end of the day, I think by what the rule is now, it's the right call. They made the right call, which is unfortunate and maybe needs to be looked at for future reference moving forward. At the end of the day, though, that's not it. That's not why OU lost. OU lost because their offense failed miserably in the championship series.
It did.
So 2 through 6, or 2 through 5, I'm sorry. Peyton Graham 0 for 8. Blake Robertson 1 for 7. Treadaway 0 for 7. Crooks 1 for 8. That's the meat of your lineup, the heart of your lineup. Ended up 2
that has
out
been,
of 30.
Been highly productive through
Absolutely.
This playoff run. Yeah.
2 for 30 in the championship series. You're not – you can get all the great pitching that you want to. Cade Horton tried by himself yesterday to push the Sooners through. But it just wasn't enough. If it's you – in the eighth inning there, with the way that he had thrown. He had thrown 107 pitches. Do you go get him?
In game two, yes. Yeah. Your season's on the line. I would. Absolutely. Nothing against Horton, but you mentioned the pitch count stands out to me. Would you?
No.
Okay.
I wouldn't. Not then. I wouldn't have. I would have. Yeah, 107. I guess you kind of need to know more of the background of it, like the most he's thrown and that kind of stuff. You know, where was he at?
Right.
But man, not only just yesterday, but if you go all the way back to the Big 12 championship game in that tournament, I think it makes it hard to take him out there, because, you know, Trevin Michael had struggled a little bit, even in Omaha. He wasn't as sharp as what he had been, you know, leading up to it.
Yeah.
And at that point, God, it's hard for me to not just let him, unless he was in such uncharted waters with the pitch count.
Yeah.
That you feel like it's the thing to do. And it's also the thing, it's one of those things where Skip Johnson did what he's been doing. He tried to get, you know, if he could get 7 innings out of his starter, he went to Michael for the last two. You know, that was the recipe that was so successful, even though, you know, Horton got an out in the eighth and then gave up the single, and that was it. But, man, I'd have had a hard time taking him out there just because he had been so good. So good.
Yeah. I can see that. It's just a pitch count for me. Because when you get up there, eventually your arm, it just the velocity drops off, and you don't want it to get too out of hand. But I can see your point, too. To me, I just think about that pitch count.
Yeah.
Sometimes that doesn't matter when, you know, you're in a big game like that. Those guys don't even feel it.
The adrenaline was so
right,
and he's done. You're not worried about him coming back tomorrow. You know what I'm saying? Like
right,
tonight,
yeah, right?
That's not happening. And he's got all summer to rest. You know, all fall semester to rest.
Yeah.
I would have just had a hard time doing it. But I think that's a little bit of the difference between maybe when we grew up versus now. I mean, because I got news for you. If this would have been 20 years ago or 30, there's no chance they take him out.
Yeah.
And here's a good point. He was still 92 to 96.
True.
He was still there, and he still had his stuff. So, you know, you can see both sides of it because that is what they had done to get him there. I get it. Michael had been great. You know, even in the times where he got touched up a little bit, he still had enough to get it done. Mm-hmm. But with the way Horton had thrown, I would have had a hard time taking him out there.
Yeah.
But we also would be sitting here, if the next guy hit a home run, the conversation would be, golly, why didn't he put in Trevin Michael? You know, so it's kind of a damned if you do, damned if you don't situation. And it's instead of it's being judged on what happened, right? Versus the call that was made.
Yeah.
So Ole Miss first, and I called it a real title.
You just hope he's listening.
I mean, he sent me, we've won 3 football titles. I'm like, no, you haven't. Not an AP title. You won the snappy sack poll back in the 50s or something. But, you know, there's not very many schools left in that boat. I think Virginia Tech is one of them that has never won anything. Never won, think about that, never won anything.
Like, Anything.
K-State, nothing.
Not even a debate national
title?
They
won a debate national title, K-State. I'm talking about, you know.
The actual thing you do that makes you sweat,
yes,
sports.
Yes.
Okay.
You know, Mississippi State was there, but I think did they win a women's basketball, possibly?
Yeah, they, yeah.
In the last few years, I think they got them off
ago,
the schneid. But still nothing
like hit
for the men.
Buzzer beater. Yeah.
Oh, no. Their baseball team snapped that. That's back-to-back years.
Yeah. The men.
It's back-to-back years. Yeah. The Mississippi schools have got off the schneid with the baseball last year,
right,
for Mississippi State and Ole Miss this year.
Correct.
Isn't that wild?
Very true. Yeah, that's right.
That's right, yeah. So congratulations to Ole Miss. Finally with a title, a real title. I mean, what is the triggering word for make him text me and say you're wrong? I guess there's not one. How big of a you've talked about this a bunch, and even when the regional started, but how big of a run was this for Oklahoma, knowing what's next, knowing what's coming in the SEC for the baseball program?
How big it is? I think it's huge. You know, obviously they've already announced improvements to the field, to Eldell Mitchell, much needed improvements, and it's not just fan accommodations, it's player and coach accommodations too. With them being at that level where they played at this weekend on the national stage, win or loss, I thought this was big for OU baseball and Skip Johnson, because if there's anybody on the fence of going to one school over OU, they might lean back OU way, going, man, what Johnson's doing, the whole staff, not just Willits, but the whole staff, what they've got going on right there. When it works, it's working at a high level, and I can be a part of that. So I think that's big. And then there's the fact of them going to the SEC. It definitely helps. I mean, that's the way I look. I always look at the angle of what's going to help get better recruits in Norman. Playing a national title series definitely helps. Committing to the program from the school with booster money helps. And then having a great coaching staff. I think it's all there for them to continue what they're doing. Now, I'm not going to go out on a limb and say they're going to get back to the College World Series next year and they're going to be perennial contenders, but they're damn respectable. I think after this, I think that's proven, and that they're going to be taken seriously for quite a while.
Yeah, and it's perfect timing for it because
absolutely,
as we talked about when the move was made, you know, the – or at least was announced this time last year, when the rumbling started and it kind of got out there that that OU and Texas were making that move. The one program that you looked up and down the lineup at Oklahoma, and the one that you just went, ooh, I don't know if they're ready for that, was baseball. From a facility standpoint,
the
how good the team was, and what they were about to get into, the hornet's nest that is SEC baseball, really, that was a huge season for that. And you know, I think it showed, at least on social media, how much it's hard to tell if you're not there how much guys are into the program as far as the alumni. But man, that's all it was during those games. Was, I mean, guys that you recognize and guys that you know that played there, kind of getting back involved on from a social media presence. I'm sure that then this run and all the improvements, maybe that helps there financially as well from some of those guys. But it was what perfect timing for Oklahoma to go on this run as they're on the precipice of heading back or heading into the SEC, where as much as we want to talk about football and how much more difficult that's going to be on the Sooners there, baseball is a whole different animal in the SEC than it is right now in the Big 12. And another point on the text line that's right on the money, a big part of what OU did was an alumni coming back, and that's Reggie Willits, and leaving the Yankees to come to Oklahoma and be kind of the architect of that aggressive, fast offensive style that, let's be honest, paved the way for this to happen. Because as good as some of those guys and as big of a role as some of those hitters were, nobody scared you in that lineup. You know?
Yeah.
Nobody scared you. They just put the fear of God in you. They played great. Don't get me wrong. They got on a roll at the exact right time. But there wasn't a whole bunch of monsters in there where you're like, uh-oh, we can't have a guy, or you know, we can't afford the bases loaded for that guy to be up. They really didn't have that guy. They just had a collective group that really was swinging it well, and then all of a sudden, they all stopped at the same time. And unfortunately, it was those two games against Ole Miss where they all stopped. And you got to give Ole Miss's pitching credit as well. I mean, they had arms. That first guy, the reliever that started on Saturday, pitched awesome. No hits through, what, five innings? It took the sixth inning before OU finally got a hit.
Right.
You know, so that's, you know, they got those contributions from their unsung guys. You know, Gonzalez hit that home run yesterday. He was in a humongous slump. He hit one out, and Blake Robertson struck out with the bases loaded. You know, that's just the way that, like, the guys that were struggling, Ole Miss got some contributions from them, whereas the OU guys that either were on fire struggled, or the ones that were already struggling a little bit continued that on the offensive side as well. So, but man, what a fun ride.
I think the future's bright. I don't think this is a flash in the pan thing. I think the architect is already been set. I mean, the base has been set. And maybe they're a little ahead of schedule.
Could be. Very, very, very well could be. It just, when you get that chance, because you don't know if it's coming back, it's a little bit like Zalatoris in the majors.
Yeah.
Man, you got to take advantage of when you're there. Wrapping it up here on a Monday with, man, probably nobody but me watched this.
Yeah, but I see it on the rundown.
Gosh.
I'm going to have no contribution to this, so you're going to have to set me up for
it. Well, it's just that you see, and I think it's something that's taken for granted when we watch sports, is the mental side of it.
Right.
In both appreciating when you see the athletes get over the hump mentally, but then also when you don't. And yesterday, in the women's golf, it was their PGA Championship, played at Congressional Country Club, which has hosted the U.S. Open at least twice in the last 25 or 30 years. Ernie Els won there. Rory McIlroy destroyed the field last time it was there at Congressional for his first major, that U.S. Open that he won by, I don't know, 10 shots or whatever it was, 10 or 12. So that's where they were playing. And Lexi Thompson, you know, you've got the Nelly Korda especially, but the Korda twins, Lexi Thompson, maybe Stacey Lewis, but she's kind of getting up there a little bit more in age. But those are kind of, you know, Jennifer Kupcho is who won that Augusta the first amateur, the Augusta National Amateur a couple years ago. She's an American. What I'm saying is there's not very many of them on the leaderboard that can contend, and Lexi Thompson's one of them. But she has fought demons for a while now, hasn't won in 50 tournaments on tour, just regular tournaments, haven't won a major since like 2013. Blew the U.S. Open a couple of years ago down the stretch with just horrific putting. And so yesterday, the opening is there. And she actually takes the lead. And then on 14, she doesn't hit the hole from 2 feet. I mean, flat missed the hole from 2 feet. She missed the putt so bad.
Like lipped out? Or
no, didn't hit the hole. No, not even lip out. Just missed from 2 feet. Missed the whole entire hole. Didn't touch it.
Oh, wow.
From a two-footer. And it was like, okay, what was that? So she's still ahead one. She actually makes one from off the fringe on the next hole for a birdie that puts her up two shots. And then on the par 5 16th, she's right next to the green in two. And it was amazing to watch her full swing motion versus anything that required touch. Because if it was hitting driver, if it was hitting a full iron, she was right on it. No hitch, no nothing. But then she got there was a bunker in between her and the pin, but they were talking about how this is, if you were going to miss on the par 5 and 2, this is exactly where you want to be. Just pitch it over the bunker, roll right down to the hole. And she didn't completely skull it, but she definitely caught it thin and chipped it clear off the green. Mm. Then she putted it about 10 foot by, and then she missed that one and actually made the 3-footer coming back. But the look on her face said it all. That you could almost see like the mental warfare with the angel on one shoulder and the devil on the other one, and her kind of looking back like it was a tennis match, like which side. And then she goes to 17 and she hits it in there about 15 feet. She blows it by 4 foot and misses the hole entirely again from 4 feet to fall back by one. And then eventually lost the golf tournament by a shot. And you just, man, when you see those situations like that, you just feel for that person. You feel for her because anybody that's, especially golf, because hey, guess what? Everybody listening, You don't have to be this giant athlete to be able to play golf and especially be able to putt, right? I mean, anybody can putt.
Right.
And figure out how to putt, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And then when you see somebody that is that good at that craft and it has nothing to do with physical, you know she's physically capable of making that 2-footer or making the 4-footer on 17.
Yeah.
But mentally, there's so much anguish mentally that she's not physically able to do it. Something that routine and that simple. It is so crazy to watch it happen.
Well, I'm sure that cup looked like the size of a thimble, you know?
No doubt.
It's crazy. Wasn't there an old King of the Hill episode of a sports psychologist because Hank Hill couldn't shoot or something and he went that? I'm sure that's a real thing. I wonder if she's ever thought, I need to go talk to somebody.
Oh, I'm sure she has.
Yeah, I got to figure out how to bat this down.
I'm sure she has, but it just shows that you can do that, and you can try all kinds of different things. But it comes down to, especially in that game, it's just you and your emotions and your ability to control those. To be able to hit the right shots, yeah, or make the right putts.
But there's training you can do. You say it's just you, and you're right. You can just go out there and go, okay, it's only me out here. And I know I'm a horrible golfer. I'm not going to lie. And I'm an even worse golfer when people are watching me. When I'm golfing with a group that I know obviously who are better than me, I'm like, God, can you guys turn around? Get on your phones. Go talk over there. Let me hit my shot. I hate it when I know I'm being watched. So you say it's just you, but I wonder if that's the thing. You think that's the thing for her? She's like, man, these cameras are on me. I got people watching me. especially I'm up here at the top of the leaderboard. Everyone's watching me.
I think it's a lot more to do with this is what I'm supposed to do. I've always been destined to be at the top of the sport from the time that she was a little bitty kid. Mm-hmm. I mean, you knew the name Lexi Thompson when she was like 10 or 12 years old. What's crazy is she's only 27. It feels like she's been out there forever, right? I mean, she's still so young. But I don't think it's, oh my gosh, they're watching me do this. I think it's, I want this so bad, and I can prove the doubters wrong, or I can and prove to herself that she can handle it. And man, right now, it's just not going her way. Mm. And it wasn't yesterday. I mean, there is no way she should have lost that golf tournament. And not only did she lose, she didn't even get to a playoff. I mean, it was crazy. When she hit it on 17, like, she was like 15 feet. And at that point, watching, I would have told you there is a way better chance that she three-putted than that she made it. And sure enough, she did. She hit it past, and then the four-footer, I mean, there was, you could see it as she was trying to get steady over the ball. You could see it that she was not going to make that putt from me to you. I mean, she had like less than 50% chance for sure, and maybe only like 5 or 10, just because you could honestly see the mental battle going on camera, because she was having a hard time getting set. She was having a hard time. You could tell she was just completely uncomfortable in that situation with that, and it was simple. It was something that if it wasn't right then, right there, it's something she would do 100 times out of 100. But she couldn't right then.
Yeah.
And it had nothing to do with her not physically being able to do it. It was all mental. Now, this is exactly right from the text line. It says you, but I'm in the same boat. Getting our blood alcohol mixture just right to keep the nerves down on the course. Maybe it helps. Maybe she goes the JD route, the John Daly route. And with the, I mean, she's in great shape. Yep. So I don't think she's drinking a whole bunch of Diet Cokes, but maybe she mixes a little of something in with her energy drink or whatever. I mean, who hasn't had a Red Bull and vodka, for heaven's sakes?
Yeah.
It's not good on your heart, though.
No.
I wouldn't have too many of them in that situation.
No. I mean, her heart's already going a million miles per hour. Nah, it's a mental thing. She's got to get over it.
Be tough. It's going to be tough. Also,
I guess I need to watch more women's golf. I'm impressed. You follow women's golf.
I watched it yesterday. Well, because it was her. Because she was playing and was right there trying to win. By the way, Matthew Wolf, latest defection to LIV Golf, apparently. That's coming down the pike today. Also, lots of smoke around his college teammate maybe being able to join him.
Mm.
Would that be a bigger name than Brooks Koepka?
If Hovland went?
Yep.
No.
Not at the moment. But I do think that would be a huge coup for the LIV Golf Tour to get, you know, he's the most still in his prime accomplished guy that they've been able to lure onto that tour. But now you're talking about rising star type material that they don't really have any of yet. Boy, that would be wild.
The more that the LIV get, the more pressure on the PGA just to allow this to happen and allow them to play both.
I think you're right.
I think that's the talk with the other golfers.
Yeah, originally I just saw this pop up. The DP World Tour, which is the European Tour, wasn't going to have any sanctions whatsoever. Now I think they're going to have some, they're talking about some kind of punishment, but I don't think it's going to be full.
Yeah.
Like, you're suspended like it is on the PGA. Everybody have a great day.
You've been listening to the Skinny on Sports podcast with Aaron Cowan. Be sure to hit that subscribe button to get alerts of when the latest podcast is available. Thanks for listening.
That ball is blistered to right. Wow.